I'm Frank Vaughn. It's February 16, 2026, and I feel like I say this all the time. This is not the video I wanted to make today. I wanted to talk about Epstein. I wanted to talk about Charlie Kirk and the ongoing drama there. But again, we're going to have to delay because events are forcing me to talk about the Conservative Party of Canada. Now, the first thing I want to get out of the way is that just because I say something critical about the Conservative Party does not mean I am pumping the PPC. It's a false dichotomy, so leave that at the door before we proceed. First thing I want to do, and this isn't the main focus, is I want to talk about this on screen, which is one of the records out of the Epstein files, which shows a payment going to Harper & Associates Incorporated. A lot of people say that it's fake, that it's not the same Stephen Harper that ran Canada. It absolutely is. His association is taking a payment from Jeffrey Epstein shortly after he left office in Canada. However, it is not a $1 million payment. It's a payment for $3,847, and we don't know what Epstein was paying for. What it does indicate is that there was some kind of business association, not a $1 million association, but a $3,800 association with Jeffrey Epstein between Harper and Associates and Epstein himself and his corporations, some kind of business relationship that occurred after Jeffrey Epstein was convicted for soliciting a minor under 18 and engaging in prostitution. I think there's a lot more interesting things about Stephen Harper that we can discuss. If you want to talk about business ties, if you want to talk about his ties to Davos, if you want to talk about his ties to globalist organizations, if you want to talk about his time in office and how he set up the play that Justin Trudeau carried out on this country, how he increased immigration to record levels, how he shifted it from the developed world to the developing world, how he let China into this country, and how bad Stephen Harper actually was for the country. I don't know why conservatives are proud of that legacy. We can have that conversation. I'm sure in the rear view, he looks better than what we've experienced over the last 12 years, but it doesn't mean that he was all that good. It's just like saying that Chrétien and Martin were better or Mulroney was better, if anybody's making that argument. It's been a sequence of events since Trudeau replaced the country in 1982, of things getting worse for the Canadian people and our country being eroded out from under us. But I want to focus on the CPC and what their problem is today. And I wrote a tweet today, just about 25 minutes ago. It's actually a retweet. The CPC is losing. The tactic has lost. Ford has betrayed you. Harper has betrayed you. The apple-eating Pierre became Pierre O'Toole, and it's not the answer. And instead of defending kids, the CPC worries about being name-called. Now, this is in response to an individual who is himself responding to something I said yesterday, which is, if the CPC doesn't come out and recant their support for Bill C-4 and demand an open investigation into the transification of our children, then there's nothing decent to be found in the Conservative Party of Canada. We're destroying kids in Canada, full stop. You're either against it or you're evil. And that's where I'm at. I still think the Canadian public, if we're looking at Canada as a country that can be salvaged, and there's an argument that it can't be, but if you're taking that perspective, then we need to give the Conservative Party of Canada a try in federal government so that we can actually see, when they have power, what they're made of. I don't think they'll deliver anything, because if you're not willing to fight for kids because you're afraid of the labels of the CBC, you're not really willing to stand for much of anything. And so here it is. This is the individual who's advocating for the Conservatives and their weak milquetoast plays that they're doing right now. That hands the Liberals a nonstop "Conservatives hate trans kids" narrative straight through to Election Day and kills any chance of winning. Do you honestly think that most Canadians support the sterilization, the puberty blockers, the pathway to mutilation? Do you really believe Canadians support that? Do you think just maybe the 40-odd percent of people who stay home in our federal elections are crying for real representation, that they would like to see the fight? Are you really going to be kowtowed to people who tell you that you're going to be labeled as a hater of trans kids when really you're the ones trying to protect kids by stopping them from damaging their bodies irreparably? Cowards! All of you! Now, I'm sorry for that angry outburst, but it's genuine. If you're not angry in the wake of what happened this week, if you're not angry about what's happening in Canada, I don't think you have a heart, let alone a soul. Here's another comment. You can say whatever you want, but then you can lose again because you're a loser. This is coming from a guy backing a conservative party that ran Scheer, ran O'Toole, and is now turning Pierre Poilievre, apple-eating Pierre, squandering it, turning him into Pierre O'Toole. They keep losing. They're not winning elections. And I'll tell you, you can stand in denial of it all you want. You can say all of the polls are fakes because that's the easy thing to do. But the fact of the matter is the election results speak for themselves during the last federal election. And then you can look at the state of federal polling right now. The Liberals are eating your lunch. And you can say it's all fake all you want. You can think it's going to tighten up when inevitably they call an election because Carney can't secure his majority without one. Whether you like it or not, the country is moving in the direction of unifying behind Mark Carney. And you know what else? Stephen Harper, who appointed Mark Carney to run the Bank of Canada, a friend of Stephen Harper's, is coming out delivering, alongside Jean Chrétien, the message of unity. It plays right into the elbows-up crowd, plays right into Carney's hands. Ford refuses to meet with Pierre Poilievre, has stabbed him right in the back, is undermining the Conservative Party of Canada actively, and he's not alone. Conservative figures coast to coast are undermining the Conservative Party's chances, and they ain't fighting. Honestly, they deserve it at this point because they're too afraid to come out swinging. If everybody's against you, if they're rigging the thing so you're going to lose it anyway, and if the public is turning against you, why aren't you fighting? Why aren't you getting in the trenches and making reasonable arguments and taking the anger of the public, taking the anger and outrage of the media and turning it into fuel to rebuild your constituency, which whether you like it or not, is eroding right out from under you. The conservative situation heading into the next election has gotten worse and nothing's going to change. You know, I had a conversation last night, an impromptu conversation, 5 hours long with somebody I'd never met before, a Venezuelan fellow. And I don't think he'll mind me talking about this part. We compared notes about the Venezuelan opposition and the Canadian opposition. And the thesis that he was spelling out is that the Venezuelan opposition has been working with the government this entire time. I don't want to give too much away because I kind of share this thought, and that there's a reason that Donald Trump and his new foreign policy push, the new Monroe Doctrine, is very suspicious of handing the opposition leader power in Venezuela. So things are going to proceed down a different path. But we were comparing notes, you know, and the more I talked with this individual, the more I realized that the state in Canada can be very easily compared to Venezuela. It's just more sophisticated. It's not as heavy-handed. We don't have the military shooting people in the streets. We don't have a military that's capable of doing that on a broad basis if there was actually widespread civil unrest in the country. We can't control it. If you look at what happened during the Freedom Convoy, they had to tap police from all over the country, bring them to Ottawa just to deal with that one peaceful protest. I think that there was a lot of fear at the time, genuinely, that they were going to lose control and the people were going to assert themselves. And so they came down pretty hard. And then right in the wake of that, the Freedom Convoy worked. The mandates were lifted. There was nothing scientific about the mandates to start. And there was nothing scientific or timely in terms of the science about them being lifted. And that's the lockdowns. That's the vaccine mandates. They went away and they came in for political reasons. But I digress. And again, how soft and lukewarm was the Conservative Party then as well? You know, they said some things. They did some voting in the House, but like, they're not really fighting. And fighting is the only way you win a battle. And the evidence is on the screen. If you think this is all just fake polling, well, you're making excuses for failure. A rare Canadian consensus view of the U.S. sour negative views of the United States dominate across regions, demographics, and political lines, placing the U.S. closer to non-democratic states than to democratic allies. Whether you like it or not, this is the Canadian mind. And without fighting, you're not going to change the Canadian mind. You can't do it by catering to it. Like, when it comes to the United States, It's like the Conservative Party takes the liberal talking points on Elbows Up and the United States, and they feed it to ChatGPT, and they say, give us the same thing, but use very different words to explain it, and never use the term elbows up. And you pretty much get the conservative position vis-a-vis the United States. It's not that much different. I mean, Pierre Poilievre campaigned, instead of campaigning on a message that the liberals have broken a relationship, a long-standing, multi-decade relationship, where we could depend on the United States to defend our interests and defend our country to the point where we could denude our military and reduce it to the point where it is ineffective as a fighting force. We could do that because we depended on Big Brother United States. They gave us a $200 billion trade surplus, which we could then spend and we could tax and we could do all this stuff with. Brilliant trading relationship that, in spite of all the rhetoric, is irreplaceable. And that the liberals broke that and that the Conservative Party would fix it. They didn't convey that message. They more or less adopted the same anti-US rhetoric because they believe they can't change the Canadian mind. They believe that if they stand for what is right and what is true, they will lose. That it's not worth fighting for. So the only path to victory is catering to the center. So they get their base from Western Canada, where the only real energy, by the way, is coming from. The independence movement is the only new thing in town out here. It's the only new thing. Western independence is the only new political energy that's being organized in the country right now. And for those who call it treachery, I mean, deal with Quebec first. Give me a break. Quebec robs the country. Quebec represents its own interests. Quebec is going to have a provincial government that's going to run a referendum. And none of you people are that angry about it. You're just used to it. Well, it's our turn. The only thing that's going to move our cause forward is the threat of separation, because the federal conservatives, in spite of getting their treasure from us and getting most of their MPs from Western Canada, we're constantly told that we are the problem, that we're too purist, that if we actually tell the truth about what's happening to kids in this country, we'll lose again, and the CBC will call us names, even though all we produce in the CPC, and I say we, I'm not a member of the CPC. I'm a lukewarm supporter at times at best. And in the wake of what's happened in the last week, I'm right back to there's no point. Unless they come out and repudiate their voting record and take a different direction when it comes to this, there's just nothing there for me. And separation is it. The separatist cause is it. Maybe it'll take time to build. Maybe they don't win the first referendum. But it needs to be organized into a politically powerful force. And I think now is the time. And there's a lot of storm clouds building on the horizon that none of your federal politicians are really telling you about. Actually, I shouldn't say that. The liberals are actually telling you the truth. You're going to suffer. Your living standards are going to decline. Your taxes are going to go up. And you're going to have to belt tighten. And the entire Canadian economy is going to have to suffer because we just don't want to sit down and actually deal with the very real issues that the Americans are highlighting about Canada. The unfairness in trade, it's very unfair. Reciprocal tariffs means they were just matching what we do to them. The fact that they brought to light the international scale of organized crime in Canada, we don't want to deal with that. We would rather make everybody suffer. And at least the liberals are telling you you're going to suffer if you follow their path. And when I say liberals, I include Stephen Harper, because he's telling you that too. There is no price the Canadian citizen shouldn't bear to save this country, even though his government sold this country out in a plethora of ways. And even though the liberals did far more in the last 10 years, we can't forget that Stephen Harper set up the ball, set up the shot, provided the assist for first Justin Trudeau, and now this guy, a Stephen Harper appointee. Like, conservatism in Canada is being betrayed by its leadership. And somehow I'm the bad guy for pointing that out. Another layer of this story is the anti-democratic nature within the Conservative Party of Canada. And this is a story I've seen time and time again. And my right-handed God, I got another email this morning at frankvaughn@gmx.com from a former Conservative candidate who put in the time running to become the nominee for the Conservative Party, put in the time, raised all kinds of money, sold all kinds of memberships, and then at the end, because they were going to win, they were unceremoniously replaced by those who chose someone different at headquarters. And the CPC kept all the money, they kept all the memberships, and they turfed the guy who did all the work and was going to win the contest fairly. And I wish this was the first time I've read such an email. It is not. Over the years, I've had at least a half dozen of these conversations with former Conservative Party candidates who did all the work, raised all the money, sold all the memberships, only to have HQ say, thanks for your time. GTFO, we got our own person in here. So the message is tightly controlled. When I ran in 2019 federally, and the volunteers for the Conservative candidate, who is still a sitting MP right now, the volunteers for that candidate would come up to me after every single debate and they would say, man, we love hearing different ideas because honestly, every single question, every single policy position, the other four candidates from the Liberals, the Conservatives, the Greens, the NDP, all they did was preach variations on the same themes. So they, like, you'd ask them, do you support this policy? Every one of them would say yes. And then they would have different words and different extents to which they supported that policy. And then I would present to the audience ideas that were counter to that yes narrative. And they were lapping it up. They were applauding. They loved it. The bottom line is that the political parties scorn the people. They don't want you to actually have a choice. And anybody that threatens that paradigm, anybody that brings something unique to the table is, generally speaking, filtered out before they even get to the nominee position. Like I said, the party system serves as a filter. The parliament is just a rubber stamp body. They appoint the government. They know who they're going to appoint before they get there. They know who they're going to appoint before they even run. And if they don't do what they're supposed to do, they will lose their careers. They'll get kicked out of politics. They'll lose the gold-plated pension. They'll lose the powerful wages. They'll lose the expense accounts. They'll lose the catered lunches. They'll lose all the things that they truly value by the time that they get there. And it's a tragedy. The guy that I, the email that I got this morning, which I haven't even responded to yet, this is I don't want to get into personal details, but a very respectable individual who has paid a service to this country and is very smart and would have been very capable. But because he espoused some moderately different views from the Conservative Party, or because they were worried that they couldn't control him, they kept all of his work for themselves and kicked him to the curb. That's the other problem internally with the CPC. And that's why anybody that came up to me, those volunteers that came up to me and said, man, you should have ran for the Conservative nomination. Why didn't you do that? There's a lot of naive people who volunteer for the Conservative Party of Canada and don't understand that real optionality, real charismatic people are filtered out. There's no opportunity for a person like me to ever run for the Conservative Party of Canada. We're locked out. And you might say, oh, that's because you're a radical, Frank. You express views. You know, you want to protect kids and make sure they're not getting sterilized before they've even entered puberty. I mean, goddamn me for that. You might say that. But there's far more moderate people out there. There's far more moderate people who have worked really hard. You know, one that comes to mind, and I think most of his story is public, is Wyatt Claypool. And, you know, you can argue about his allegiances now, or, you know, you can say whatever you want. That guy went and knocked on a lot of doors. He printed a lot of pamphlets. He raised money. He sold memberships. And he was unceremoniously turfed. And some would say, yeah, but he was still loyal to the CPC. That's his choice. A man who does the work, I might disagree with it, but, like, I can't judge the guy. He did the work, and he's got an objective. But they took advantage of him, too. And he's a very moderate guy. You could say that he's very safe. He's an open and avowed neocon. You don't get much more mainstream than that. And even he was unpalatable to the Conservative Party of Canada. What's that all about? And then you got to consider as well, when Daniel Boardman and when Wyatt Claypool, when I don't know how much Wyatt was involved in it, but when they told some truths about some of the people that were around Aaron O'Toole, well, they got sued for it. And I mean, that's the way the CPC operates. And it's a tragedy because right now what you need is you need... If you had Donald Trump in Canada, it wouldn't work. That braggadocious nature, that hair, that loud mouth, that's not what Canada needs. What Canada needed was apple-eating Pierre. He was just fine. He was just fine the way that he was. And then when they got into the election campaign, he became PR Pierre. He became Pierre O'Toole. He rested on talking points, and he earned his loss. The largest lead in electoral history evaporated. They thought they could coast over the finish line. It's the mistake the CPC makes every single time. And they've been kind of rudderless ever since. Do you know how weak it makes them look? That they allowed candidates to come into the Conservative Party of Canada that could be so easily lured away by Mark Carney. Two floor crossers. I thought there might be more. But in the circumstances since those floor crossings, I now understand why the tide might have stopped, because it's clear that Carney's not going to be able to get the majority that he wanted. If he truly wants, because he doesn't need it, he can operate through the Governor General's office, he can prorogue Parliament and send it home, and he can continue on. But to do the kinds of damage, to reorganize Canada the way that he wants to reorganize Canada, he needs a mandate. And looking at the polling, Canadians are hypnotized into believing Mark Carney is the best option. The central banker that was appointed by Stephen Harper, this guy who worked for Goldman Sachs, represented J.P. Morgan's, represented the interests of U.S. banking, made his career. All of his money is stored in the United States. He's not going to work against the value of his own bag. He's hypnotized the Canadian public, and they actually believe that he is here to do us a solid. He's in a very good position. And that position's not threatened because, quite honestly, Pierre Poilievre's holding his hands. Pierre Poilievre is voting alongside his policy. Pierre Poilievre and his Conservative Party, they voted for C5 to concentrate more power in the hands of the federal government. And people pretzel logic the reasons why and say, oh, the Conservative Party forced amendments. At the end of the day, they voted to hand this very government far more power through C5 to ride roughshod over the provinces. How do you justify that? How do you justify a Conservative Party that time and time again will not stand up for the health and well-being of children and vote alongside the Liberals every step of the way? You can't stand up for it. You can make a pragmatic argument, but even that's being eroded by a very effective big red machine. So the tough on crime talking point from the last election. Well, now we see bail reform coming from the Liberals. They want to start putting criminals in jail. And the Canadian public is more than happy to forget that it was the Liberals that set them loose on the street in the first place. That the government that we have right now is the exact same government we've had for the last 11 years. The government that passed C-75, that removed mandatory minimums for some of the most heinous crimes in this country. The same government that still upholds GLADU principles and has kid gloves for people that have, you know, whatever ascribed identifiable minority group. We have the instance that I highlighted in yesterday's video, that you got a guy who stabbed his own children to the point where it's so hard for me to talk about. This is why I don't understand how conservatives can go about every single day without the urge to fight against this thing that's happening. Because whenever I talk about it, that's what I want to do. I want to express myself. I want to put my face and my name out there saying, I don't support this. I stand for change. Why don't they feel the same way? This guy stabs two kids, severs his daughter's esophagus, so she's on a feeding tube. They're going to be damaged psychologically and physically for life. And he's out on the streets waiting sentencing, doing TikToks for kids, living in a van that says every child matters on the side. He's proud of it. He's doing social media posts about how he's out of jail and proud of that fact. That's the country that the Liberals set up, that people who are of certain ethnic origins are not as culpable for their crimes as the white population. They actually set up a racist regime in this country that only targets one specific ethnic group, denies them their identity at the same time, because when you lump everybody together as white with a certain amount of skin pigment, You're basically saying there's no difference between an Italian or a Dutch person or a German or a Frenchman or an Englishman or a Scotsman or an Irishman. And I think those that have those identities and actually care about them would probably have something to say about that, that maybe a Greek is not the same as a Spaniard. And then you have the conversation about, is a Spaniard white? Like, it's so ridiculous. They've set up this racist system and there isn't any opposition to it. They're not effective. The Conservative Party of Canada is effectively a campaign of surrender. And as the country, whether you like it or not, unifies around the Carney Liberals who represent all of this, there are many. The predominant thinking in the Conservative Party is that's just the way the country is. And we have to accept it and we have to cater to it. And we have to get power first before we can do anything. But that's not going to work. Because the tide is moving against the truth in this country. The tide is moving against real conservatism. And it's going to keep moving against it if there's no fight. If there's nobody making an aggressive argument to try and change the minds of the populace. If there's nobody trying to awaken the silent masses, like myself, who feel completely unrepresented by everybody. Again, this is not a dichotomy between the CPC and PPC, because I tell the truth about the CPC does not mean I support the PPC. I don't. Maxime Bernier is a petit dictator. He's got a little party. It's not even a party. It's a pseudo party. It doesn't have a constitution. It has no electoral prospects, and he opposes any good idea that would actually lead to electoral success. It is there to occupy the space where something real should be. It is there to capitalize on some good ideas, but never actually deliver anything tangible for those ideas. And it's been that way since the beginning, even though there was a shred of hope at the very beginning in the first 8 to 10 months that it might be something different. It very quickly, to me, revealed itself to be exactly what it is. And a lot of the good people that were involved, it took them a little longer. Because I was telling the truth about what the CPC or what the PPC had became by May, June of 2020, somewhere in there. But I had made up my mind in January that it wasn't a serious thing. And did I ever eat it for that? And the vast majority of people who had everything bad to say about me, who called me every single name at the time, over the last 5 years, have found their way back to me to say, you know, I'm sorry I did that. And I say, all is forgiven because you meant well. You meant well. Took you a little longer to get there, but you meant well. This isn't about the PPC. This is about the fact that the tide ain't going to turn if nobody is willing to strive against it. And the Conservative Party of Canada, you can see they're losing it. The only thing they've got left is Western Canada. They've lost the East. They're losing the East. And then they look at Western Canada, where they are the strongest, and they dare cast aspersions at our feet. We're too purist. We're too authentic. We're too moral. We actually care too much about the kids. We care too much about the truth. It's our fault they can't win. We're too righteous. That's a pathetic loser's argument. And it's not one I'm willing to make, and I won't make, and I won't make excuses for it anymore. If you value an honest approach to politics, if you value an honest approach to commentary, if you value an ad-free experience, if you value my time to create these things, please consider supporting my efforts via the donate link. It is the only way I finance this. There's no sponsorships. The Liberals aren't paying me. The Conservatives aren't paying me. The Communists aren't paying me. The far-right Nationalists aren't paying me. Every one of them hate me for various different reasons. And I could give a damn, because the only thing I care about is trying and striving to tell the truth about the situation as it is. I don't have a political axe to grind. I'm not trying to build a constituency. I have resisted all callings, all requests for me to get directly involved in politics in several different provinces in this country from 2019 to now. And I continue to be resistant. I just want to provide ad-free commentary. And if you like the work, consider supporting it. And I'll see you in the next one.